It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. So the talk today is on Bodhidharma's fifth precept, no selling the wine of delusion. And so here's the precept. Self nature is mysteriously profound, truth of original basic purity. Not to give birth of ignorance is called no selling wine, no drinking wine. So again, he's saying that our self nature, the very nature of the core nature of us is profound. It's mysteriously profound. I love that expression. It covers everything. And he's saying the truth is our original basic purity. So just, we are basically pure. And doing something that spoils that or takes away from our original basic purity is giving birth to ignorance. So most of us, when we drink, we don't think we're giving birth to ignorance. We're not thinking like that. So it's a little bit of a different view. I want to share with you Koban Jino Otogawa's words to his Sesshin students on this. There's not a lot of them, but they're interesting. So Koban says, we try not to intoxicate our body and mind, because if we go along with a heavy trip of intoxication, the very powerful life or chemical takes over our life. We don't know what was eaten, what was taken, or what was given. The unity, this is the sentence that I love the most. The unity of energy with other existences is very delicate. And if we are intoxicated, we lose the opportunity to unite with them. I'm going to read that one again. The unity of energy with other existences is very delicate. And if we are intoxicated, we lose the opportunity to unite with them. In a sense, nothing is wrong to do. Right and wrong are just our way of perceiving things and evaluating how human life can be either good or in very dangerous shape. But our body decides what to do about bodily intoxication, but our mind is open to enormous amounts of teaching of many kinds. And these teachings work powerfully. So to delude the true nature is what is called intoxication, to delude our true nature. Hopefully, we will observe our whole life with Buddha's body and mind and live through this life without much delusion. Once we give our lives to delusion, we lose contact with many important things and people. And he instructs, keep your mind clear and let it penetrate through things and all people and situations. That is why the precepts are offered. They are not just to prohibit you from doing one thing or another, but to keep your true nature functioning at its best. So I just want to say, it's not about right and wrong. It's about guarding and preserving our original basic purity. Diluting that is called intoxication. It's actually a very sane idea. So Koban continues, This precept can literally refer to wine, as well as other things which intoxicate our body and mind. This desire for intoxication has lasted for centuries and centuries. And the more heavily we get into illusion or delusion, the more removed we are from ourselves. Bodhidharma says that self nature, our true nature, is a fantastic thing. I think he's referring to mysteriously profound. And yet illusions and delusions take over and cover up our true nature. Then we are helpless, and we cannot recover by ourselves. The powerful forces of love, compassion, and extreme clarity of mind, which let a dynamic body be in the right place at the right time, aren't easy to sustain, especially when we intoxicate ourselves over and over again and spoil ourselves. So these words, no selling the wine of delusion, are kind words. So he says, I don't think it's very often that we think of prohibitions about drinking as kind. They're kind words. He says, there are many stories about uncontrolled, helpless situations caused by the powerful effect of intoxication on our delicate bodies and minds. You drink strong wine and step on an insect unaware. In the next life, you will be born as that insect, and then you will be stepped on by a drunken man. If you wish to control or conduct yourself well, the only way is by inner recognition of yourself. So I believe that he means, instead of drinking, stay with the person who wants to drink and study who that person is. Why am I wanting something else? What's the matter with what I have right now? Maybe I should look into that more closely. I'm thinking of yesterday when I attended a one-day session with Tenshin Roshi, who's Reb. That's Reb, Tenshin Roshi. So whenever I say Tenshin Roshi, that means Reb. And he gave several talks yesterday, and they were about exactly this, not about intoxication, but about the way, capital W, the Buddha way, pervades every single thing without exception. And the way to stay on the path is to be absolutely present with whoever we are this minute, continually. We stay absolutely present with whoever we are this minute. So when we're wanting to drink, he didn't say that, now I'm saying this, if so, I'm explaining. If we're wanting to drink, then we stay absolutely present with wanting to drink this minute, and that is being pervaded by the way completely. And so the only way to get off track of the way, and you say the way to where? The way to awakening. The only way to get off track from the way to awakening is not being 100% present with yourself right now, however you are. So it doesn't really matter what state you're in. It only matters that you're present to that state every single minute. And that's the way to stay on the path to awakening. I love it because it's so entirely within our means. It's really entirely within our means. And when we get off, when we're not present this minute, every minute, then we can pull ourselves back. So we know what to do. And then if we get off, we know what to do. So, you know, how neat is that? I think it's just absolutely wonderful. So, there's one more little passage by Coben. He says, even so-called religious ways can be the wine of delusion. Many times we call on spiritual subjects in order to polish ourselves, but these can have the same kind of effect as wine. Some religions cause you to become excited, bringing you to a state of ecstatic excitement. And you'd better think that this isn't the ultimate. Yet there are many religions which focus on an ultimate state. If Zazen practice makes you feel like that, your Zazen is not the right one. An intoxicated, agitated state is the opposite from great wisdom, opposite from a clear perspective on what this existence, this life, is all about. Great wisdom is something which makes you want to deeply appreciate yourself and others. If practice causes that deep appreciation and respect, there is peace and satisfaction. That is what real religion does. Then one has perfect contact with the self and the ultimate. So what I get out of that is that's a way to measure how we're doing. If we have deep appreciation and respect for ourselves and others, we're pretty much okay. We're doing a good job. And if we start losing that appreciation of ourselves and others, we need to pull ourselves back. And back to what? Back to complete and utter attention to who we are right now. That's it. That's Buddhist practice in a nutshell. We talk and talk and talk, and it all boils down to right here, right now, pay attention. And if you see yourself off, pull yourself back. This idea of the unity of energy with other existences is very delicate. And if we are intoxicated, we lose the opportunity to unite with them. I like this point because it's rarely made, and it showcases the opposite virtue from the one sought by users of substances. Bodhidharma isn't mincing words. Not to give birth of ignorance, or rather to give birth of ignorance, is what we do when we alter anything about ourselves. We give birth to ignorance. You could think of it that way. And it's hard. And more precisely, it's frustrating. We have ideas about how we'd like to be, and it can be hard to face seeing that we're not that, especially when we've been trying and trying and trying. And then we see, this isn't going anywhere. And so then we pretend, oh, I didn't want that anyway, or let me just think about this for a while. Let's have a drink. And Bodhidharma is very, very much encouraging us not to do that and to stay present to our original purity. That original purity that Bodhidharma is calling is the same thing that Reb talked about yesterday, of the way being, the way pervading all beings every second. The way is always pervading thoroughly everywhere, perfect or imperfect. It's pervading everywhere. And if we could remember that, so that's an ultimate truth. So we have to just know that that's how it is, even though we can't at this moment really feel that. We have to take it on faith for a while. Still, it's not that hard a thing to take on faith that actually either thinking of it as our original basic purity or that the way pervades every single thing, every minute, perfect or imperfect. We've talked about this subject before when we went through the precepts from a more conventional truth standpoint. And I remember telling you about this experience I had, which I'm going to tell you again because it so perfectly demonstrates how we are, like every minute, how we all actually are. So this was when I was growing up. Our house had this back porch that was screened in, and it was close to this very big, I think it was an oak tree, and it overhung half the yard. And in the summer, when it rained, we could sit out on the porch, which was screened in, and so the rain didn't come in, but you could just almost feel like you were in the rain, and it was just raining from the sky. I'm remembering yesterday, it poured, and we were doing zazen, and I felt like if there weren't a roof over our heads right now, we would just dissolve. The rain would just pound us into the earth. It was just so hard. It pounded so hard. But if there weren't a roof here, that's what would be happening. And I'm free associating to that when I'm remembering as a child sitting on the porch, hearing the rain and just absolutely loving it. It's even with the thunder and the lightning. So then recently I was on the phone with someone who lived in the Appalachians, and in the background I heard rain. And while the person was lamenting about, oh, it's raining again, I was remembering how wonderful these places are, unlike here, where, you know, until now, it hardly ever rains. So we were both wanting something different. We were both in our situation wanting something different. I was sitting there hearing the rain in the background and thinking, oh, how wonderful, I wish it would rain here. And she was saying, it's raining again, I wish it would stop. So we were both in situations wanting our situation to be something other than it was. And isn't that the human condition? I mean, we're always doing that. And this precept, no selling the wine of delusion, is saying, don't do that. Stay with who you are right now. I, who am loving the memory of sitting, listening to the rain, and having to put up with California, that where it never rains until now, and just being the person living in California where it never rains, and stay with that, and stay with that, and stay with that. And her too, to stay with the rain in her backyard that also has lots of birds too. I wish we had birds. So there it is. And even now, as I give this talk again, I know that it's difficult for people to hear, don't drink, because you spoil your original purity. That's a hard talk to give, and I wish I could make it more pleasant and change the fact that it's a hard talk to give. So even now, I'm in the situation of wishing that we were talking about a subject that was more palatable to people. But staying with ourselves and studying ourselves is the basis of Buddhism. That's Buddhism. That is Buddhism. Study the self. And so when we try and change our states, it seems, at first, it seems innocent, but it's not innocent. Innocence is not to touch things at all. Not to touch things at all. Innocence is not to even to think of anything other than precisely what is happening right now. We usually don't think of innocence that way. So while at the conventional level, the precept of no intoxicants is understood as encouraging us to encourage our behavior, us to control our behavior by not using addictive substances. Ironically, using individual effort to try to control our behavior is itself a violation of the precept, which Dogen puts it, here is the place, here the way unfolds. He means our body and mind right now, right here, is the way, that's where the way unfolds right now. And the way is the way to awakening. And that's the place to stay with. Tenshin Roshi, Reb, puts it thusly. Most people cannot stand to be just ordinary. So we have Zen centers to train people to be patient and accept their ordinariness. Manjushri went all the way to become a completely ordinary person. Thus, he realized that there is really no such thing as an ordinary person living all by herself. This is called waking up. When someone is having trouble staying awake, I, Reb, can give her some advice. But actually, the ultimate practice is, if you are having trouble staying awake, and that's any substitute anything that you're having trouble with. If you're having trouble staying awake, have trouble staying awake. That's who you are right now, having trouble staying awake. It's okay to try to stay awake when you're having trouble staying awake. It's all right to be the person trying to stay awake. He means during Zazen, but you can take it in your life. But before you do anything, first of all, be this person and feel what it is like to be a person who is stuck in that state. Being this person is your ticket, your price of admission into the eon of emptiness. Being this person is the way to practice just sitting. And he's being very serious. This line, Manjushri went all the way to become a completely ordinary person. I mean, so think about it. The way is not up, but down. The way is down. The most ordinary of ordinary. But however, even that can be made into a thing, you know, and you can become I'm just the ordinary person and I don't like such and such. And then you can get really attached and kind of identify with how ordinary you are. So we need to be delicate. That's our way of life. So in a state of craving to be out of who we are at that moment, we may want to bring something in to give us pleasure or take the pain away. And so we disrespect our current manifestation of our precious life. Whenever the use of a substance or a state of being is based on craving, it becomes an intoxicant. So it's not just wine. It's whenever we're craving something. Whenever we're craving something, that thing becomes an intoxicant. So here are some examples of intoxicants that we don't normally think of as intoxicants. Scratching an itch aggressively so that it bleeds can be an intoxicant. Yelling or screaming at someone can be an intoxicant. Biting your nails, picking at your skin, cutting can all be intoxicants. Buying things and hoarding can be intoxicants. Video games, violent films, Netflix can be intoxicants. Killing, as in hunting, or stealing, indeed breaking any of the precepts habitually, can be an intoxicant. So ironically, regarding the last, this is really interesting. Uchiyana Roshi, in a comment on Dogen's Bendoa, said, when we observe a certain precept, we are released from the delusory desire corresponding to that precept. You are emancipated as much as you practice. So that's really good to know. That's really good to know. As to the extent that we practice a precept, we're released from the delusory desire corresponding to that precept. And the word ignorance means ignorance of the nature of the self. So ignorance means no light. And drugs and alcohol numb or hyper excite the mind and extinguish the inherent light that is there. So we see through eyes that are blinded by selfishness and self-centeredness and chemical confusion. And we've talked a lot lately about how self-clinging is at the root of the attachment that prevents awakening. That's the seventh level of consciousness. We've talked about the eight levels of consciousness, the eighth being the alaya, the storehouse of everything that's ever happened to us, leftovers from that. And the seventh house is our ego. And the ego is what is where our self-clinging and self-centeredness is rooted. And that is what prevents us from awakening. And that is what we want to turn into wisdom. So how does the impulse to abuse or simply change our state arise? And it comes from an impulse from turning away from what Dogen calls the great brightness of our being. In this great brightness, nothing can be brought in. And so being upright with this great brightness, we have no desire to bring anything in. This is Dogen. He's basically saying the same thing as Bodhidharma. This is basically Zazen. Sitting upright in this brightness, we study the precept, and the precept will tell us its secret in the very way that we'll be able to understand it. Being upright is not for the sake of improving yourself or the situation. We're upright just to be upright for the sake of all beings. So you can think of being upright as sitting Zazen, and being upright as being completely present in this moment right now. And then continuing to practice being completely present in this moment right now, that is being upright. That's all that being upright is. Rev says, being upright and self-forgetting allows the Dharma flower to open in whatever circumstances come to be. He says the Dharma flower is already opening everywhere throughout the universe. But this Dharma flower is really our true nature. It's a little flowery, but that's what it means, our true nature. So it's a subtle point. Doing something to try to improve yourself is not this bodhisattva precept. This precept is about liberating self and others from self-concern. It is precisely about not using anything to improve anybody, but using everything to help everybody. This precept is about dropping self-concern and appreciating things just as they are. When you do that, when you accept yourself and allow yourself to be just as you are, all your energies will turn toward the welfare of others. It's very ironic. When we accept ourselves just as we are, all of our energies turn toward the welfare of others. Consciousness of one's precious life and staying settled on the brightness of one's precious life is the critical point. In Zazen, it's called, the other name for Zazen is the self making the self into the self. That's, I think that's Kodo Sawaki's phrase, the self making the self into the self. That's what Zazen is. So that said, receiving and caring for the precepts involves both hearing the commitment from others and making the commitment yourself. You do not hear and make commitments by your own power, nor can anyone do it for you. It is a mysterious process that happens in communion. It is born that way. Perhaps that is why the 12-step program has been so inordinately successful. That's really all I have to say for the talk. I'll just be quiet for a minute. Well, here are what I think are the five most important points that were made in this talk. The first is Bodhidharma says that self-nature, or our true nature, is a fantastic thing, and yet illusions and delusions take over and cover up our true nature. Then we are helpless. We cannot recover by ourselves. So just to comment, partly, this is so because the illusions and delusions, having taken over all what we see are our illusions and delusions. That's what we see, and we're taken over by that. And in that picture, what's the problem? We've lost reality altogether, and then there's no idea even of trying to see ourselves. We're seeing our illusions and delusions instead. So it's actually a really dangerous state. We can just be truly deluded. Secondly, the powerful force of love, compassion, and extreme clarity of mind which let a dynamic body be in the right place at the right time, aren't easy to sustain, especially when we intoxicate ourselves over and over again and spoil ourselves. So these words, no selling the wine of delusion, are kind words. This idea of kindness is rarely heard in connection with a precept like no intoxicants. And it's not a pointing. This precept is not a finger pointing at you. It's actually a kind suggestion of how you can stay with your own basic purity. And this third idea, innocence is to not touch things at all. Innocence is not even to think of anything other than precisely what is happening right now. But I'm thinking that you can use that for yourself as a wake-up call. So if innocence is not to touch things at all, or to stay with yourself right now at all times, and that's really hard, then when you go, oh, that's hard, that's really hard, then, oh, I'm thinking about how hard it is. That's so I'm not with myself right now. You can use when you start thinking about how hard it is as a wake-up call to get yourself back to thinking about, oh, I'm the person right now. I'm thinking about how hard it is to stay with myself right now. But actually, I'm doing it. I'm staying with myself. I'm staying with the person who's stuck right now on thinking about how hard it is. I hope I'm getting across how this all works. The fourth important point was what Reb was saying. It's all right to be a person trying to stay awake. Before you do anything, first of all, be this person and feel what it is like to be a person who is stuck in this state. Being this person is your ticket, your price of admission into the eon of emptiness. Being this person is the way to practice just sitting. So listen carefully. If you're stuck, Reb says, be completely stuck. And that is the gateway to awakening. This is a really liberating, this talk, it's all about liberating yourself. And it's not that hard. It really isn't that hard, actually. And then finally, doing something to try to improve yourself is not this bodhisattva precept. This precept is about liberating self and others from self-concern. It is precisely about not using anything to improve anybody and using everything to help everybody. This precept is about dropping self-concern and appreciating beings just as they are. So there's a fine line here, I just want to point out, between self-care and self-concern. I'm just noticing a really fine line. Self-care and self-concern. So here are some ideas for reflection during the week. If practice causes that deep appreciation and respect, there is peace and satisfaction, and that is what real religion does. Then one has perfect contact with the self and the ultimate. So please reflect on this extremely important concept. This is for this week, to reflect on this idea that when you have deep respect for yourself, and deep appreciation for yourself. There is a kind of peace and satisfaction that takes over. And so these are mirrors. This is a mirror to how you're doing. And you can even look at the peace and satisfaction in your family and loved ones. And they're mirrors to how you're doing with your own deep appreciation of yourself. When you're practicing deep appreciation of yourself, when you're practicing being fully present in the moment, you receive a deep appreciation of yourself and others. And so you can take that as a measure. Like when you start not having that, then you can go, I'm off track. I need to start practicing being more fully present every single moment. And from there will arise a deep appreciation of yourself and a kind of peace and satisfaction. So to be watching that this week is one suggestion for you. And secondly, to keep your mind clear and let it penetrate through things and all people and situations. This is why the precepts are offered. Take some time to let this point register. First, that the precepts are offered. They're offered, not pushed in your face. They're offered. Then that their intent through your thoughts and actions will penetrate through things and all people and situations. So this is a tall order. What I'm going to ask you to do, where are you on this trajectory? Where are you on the trajectory of keeping your mind clear and letting it penetrate through things and all people and situations? Where are you on that trajectory? Are you never? Are you sometimes? Are you almost always? Where are you? And then to delude the true nature is what we call intoxication. And anything that deludes our original basic purity is an intoxicant. And so what are your intoxicants? That's a third point of reflection. What are your intoxicants? And then fourth, this idea of Rebs, most people cannot stand to be just ordinary. So we have Zen centers to train people to be patient and accept their ordinariness. Manjushri went all the way to become a completely ordinary person. Thus he realized that there's really no such thing as an ordinary person living by herself. And this is called waking up. So before you heard this statement, what was your idea of waking up? Probably it wasn't winning the ordinary prize. What was your idea? What is your idea? What do you think waking up is? We're saying today that waking up is going backwards and backwards and backwards until we're just ordinary and staying with our ordinary selves minute by minute by minute. And finally, the fifth thing to reflect on is this fine line between self-care and self-concern. It's very mushy, this line. So see if you can ferret it out. And each thing that you do, like washing your face or doing the dishes or dressing for the day or asking for a raise, so just ask yourself, is this self-care or is it self-concern. We're trying to minimize self-concern and turn it into others' concern. Being concerned for the welfare of others. So you yourself are the one who can determine that this fine point, the fine line between self-care and self-concern. I think it's a really interesting point. I wonder if there are any questions.
Yes, Gail. So the first question that we have is, can you give an example of where you tried to be something that you're not and had to fight the frustration because you weren't that thing?
I'm going to give myself as an example. So this is kind of the opposite. This kind of goes the opposite. So I had this idea as a poet. I had this idea of using words. I wanted to use words carefully and correctly. And it bothered me a lot that other people were sloppy about their use of words. In particular, I hated how are you? How are you? Let's say by a grocery clerk. To me, when there's a line of 10 people in when they're rushing to get home and they're irritated that everything is taking too long. And then the grocery clerk asked me how I am. And, you know, and if I, so I, when I cared about the use of words correctly, I don't want to be asked how I could give, you know, I could take an hour to tell her how I am, actually. And she's asking how I am. And so I'm starting to think how I am. And so I said nothing. I said nothing, thinking I'm not going to participate in this misuse of words. And so I'm going to say nothing. And I just stare back at her. And then I don't know if this is going to answer your question or not. I'll just finish this. Then I heard the precept, lovely speech. When I learned about the precept of lovely speech, it really took me aback. And I realized I'm not practicing that. And right away, as soon as I heard that precept, lovely speech, I immediately changed. So I had been doing this for a long time. And I realized that when I say nothing, the grocery clerk isn't thinking, oh, she thinks that I'm misusing speech, so I better have a different idea of how to greet my customers because I don't want to use something that's misusing. That's not what she's thinking. She's thinking, you know, that bitch or something more like that. And so I'm totally not accomplishing what I want. So I immediately changed and started saying all the things I hated, you know. Oh, well, how are you today? You know, how is your day going so far? Which I particularly hated because I felt like it's a contrivance of trying to make it look real when the whole thing is not real. I understand that it's just meant to greet you. Don't take the word seriously. But really then, it was very hard for me to have those words said in a context where they couldn't be used properly. But then I just changed right away, and that's an example of how practicing the precept immediately changes your desire even for doing the thing that the precept is prohibiting. So I no longer wanted to use, to do anything but lovely speech. And just that desire changed my speech altogether. I hope I am answering your question. And I'm sorry if I'm not, but that's what I came to my mind when you asked the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next one that we have is, at one point you said, when we observe a certain precept, we are released from the delusory desire corresponding to that precept. Could you give an example?
I sort of just did, but when you lie, let's say when you lie, you're trying to control what's going on in the other person's mind. You're trying to make them think something that isn't so, or that isn't accurate. At the same time, we can start believing what we're saying. I didn't mean that, honey, you know. Usually from like a parent, usually from someone who's not seeing something. But growth would be to look at yourself carefully and see what was at the root of your wanting to lie in the first place. What was the thing you're covering up? And facing oneself, actually being present with yourself and learning what you really feel, that's a growing moment. And that's a moment of being with your basic purity. And so following the precept of no lying will release you from even the desire to lie. That's another example.
Thank you, Gail. The next question that we have is, can't we be the person who acknowledges who she is, doesn't like it, and wants to be a better person in the following ways? What's wrong with trying to make ourselves into a better person? I thought we were supposed to do that.
Well, there's two things. Trying to make yourself into a better person is trying to control who you are, making yourself something other than who you are right now. And since staying with who you are right now, that is the way. And you can say, well, who I am right now is the person who wants to make myself into a better person. And if you do that, then you're fine. I'm the person right now who wants to make myself into a better person. And actually right now, I'm becoming a better person because I'm staying with the desire to make myself into a better person right now, then there's nothing wrong with it. Only when you start shifting away from who you are right now and thinking, well, if I were that over there, or I was like her, or I was like this idea I have in my mind, then you're far beyond this person right now who isn't happy with herself and wants to be a better person, wants to change who she is right now. The only way that it's okay is to stay with your desire to change and acknowledge it and be that person. I am the person who doesn't like myself at all. And you can just say that. You can stay right there. I'm the person who hates myself. I hate myself. And then you really feel how much you hate yourself. Just fully, completely feel your true hatred of yourself. That's the way. That would be the way for the person who wants to improve herself. It's a little convoluted, but I hope you're starting to get it. So no matter what, you stay with it. You stay with the thing. So for me, I'm the person, you know, probably called a bitch by many grocery clerks because I wouldn't answer their how are yous. And that's me. I'm that person. Am I really a bitch? Maybe in that moment, I don't know. But I have to stay with the bitch part of myself. And so I'm going to do that right now. So that's the way. That's the way. The way to what? The way to awakening. That's the way to awakening. Reb says that's your ticket to eons of emptiness. Oh my gosh, I see I'm completely out of time. And I want to thank my team. I want to thank Sahar and Brian and Brendan for all of the work that they've done to make these talks possible. And you, who without you, these talks would not be possible. And without the people who listen during the week, these talks would not be possible. So thank you all so very much. So very much. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.